This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. I'm really happy that you have joined me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I highly recommend that you also visit and subscribe to spingolaspeaks.net and screeningsandyhook.net. I do not access my regular email address during the program. So, if you have questions or comments during the program, just email them to comment@spingola.email. Or if you add an S at the end of comments, it will still arrive in the appropriate email box. I invite you to visit our Spingola Speaks chat room at spingola.chatango.com. If you wish to review the names of the guests that I've had the pleasure of interviewing over the years on this program since 2010, just visit spingola.com and click on the radio schedule button on the left side of the page. And I also have the names of future guests. And in both cases, I have links for those guests, along with relevant links for their subject matter. My first guest today, for the first hour, is Dr. Anthony Kanamugire. I probably butchered his wonderful name. Did I?
Yeah, Dr. Anthony Kanamugire. Yeah.
Oh, you do pronounce it Antoine. That's what I thought it was to begin with, but then I looked up the spelling and it says Anthony. I thought, no, that, I think Antoine. That's much better.
Yeah, Antoine. You got it right.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to cross that off then. And the last name is pronounced Kanamugire.
Kanamugire.
Gire. Oh, what a beautiful name.
That is just
that's a really cool name. His website is drantoine.org, and he is the author of The 21 Unspoken Truths About Marijuana, which I purchased and have read. It is available at the A site as a Kindle. The A site, of course, is Amazon. We all have a hate-love relationship with that website, but it does address our immediate gratification needs. Anyway, welcome to the program, Dr. Antoine.
A great pleasure to be with you.
I believe that I'm addicted to chocolate. I have to eat chocolate every day, and I think that any time that we're addicted to just about anything, it's probably not a good thing. But I think in this case was regarding marijuana, and as I said, I've read your book, and it makes a lot of sense to me. And I of course have concerns about it. And towards the end of the book, you talk about you can certainly control your own behavior if you go out for a drive, if you're on your way somewhere. You can certainly control your own behavior, but you have no possibility of controlling what other people on the highway are going to do. And at the rate of car accidents has gone up in recent years, and some of it is caused by people who are who have smoked or taken marijuana or other drugs, alcohol, or whatever, correct?
Yes. Actually, in some states, it's gone as high as 6%, so it increased by 6%. So, and you know, we cannot say that there is a direct link to marijuana, but these are states that legalized marijuana. So, yeah, it's gone up in a few times, because when you smoke cannabis or marijuana, what it does when it comes to driving, it decreases your attention in the next minute. When you smoke, the attention, the focus is down, and the movement coordination goes down as well. And the reaction time, this is the time you need to react to sudden events, increases. So you are slower in your reactions. Your attention is low, your focus is low, and your decision making is slow. So you are more likely to be involved in a car crash. Studies show that you are at least twice more likely to be involved in a car crash than a sober driver. And other studies there are studies in Nova Scotia that show that you are even 7 times more likely to be involved in a car crash when you're under influence of cannabis. So I clearly say in the book that if you smoke cannabis or marijuana, you need to stay away from driving, and you know, at least 6 to 8 hours before you can think about going in your car, driving your car. So it's very, very crucial to make this message clear and understood by everybody.
Right. And it's not just driving, but you talked about this one young man who was fine, and then he actually jumped off of a building and killed himself. You taught psychotic episodes with people who have taken or smoked or taken marijuana.
So cannabis is again. I try to be clear when I speak about this subject. You know, I'm not an activist or an anti-cannabis activist or any, you know, ideological messenger of any kind. I'm a physician. You know, I'm a doctor who's a consultant in the ER and in outpatient clinics and in the community as well. So I meet a lot of people, and some of the people I meet are really badly affected by this substance. So it's not a fear-mongering or anything like that. I'm just sharing the facts, the scientific facts that we have out there. So, and I even encourage people to really consider the fact, even if somebody's pro cannabis, is for legalization, especially if you're like a politician and you find yourself in a situation that you have to be for cannabis legalization, but please just consider the fact. Do not minimize the health and the effect and the scientific research that we have. You can be forward whatever position you want, but just be truthful and state the facts, because we have the facts out there, and they are deafening in some cases. You know, all of the research that we have throughout the world clearly mentioned the link between cannabis usage and increased risk of psychosis. And this risk can increase up to 2 to 5 times, you know, higher compared to non-cannabis users. And this is major. This is something I see, you know, in the ER. So when people say, oh, no, cannabis is completely harmless, it doesn't cause any bad effects, you know.
So you are a medical doctor, and you have seen the evidence. It isn't just And of course, now that they're trying to legalize it in so many places, is that a big concern for you?
Yeah, you know what concerns me more, ma'am, is the message that is, you know, the message that cannabis is harmless. You know, people who want to legalize it tend to minimize the effects. And this is the most, this is even more dangerous than legalization of cannabis. You know, when a politician goes out there and say, oh, cannabis is completely harmless, you know, I tried it and it didn't have any effect. Yes, you probably didn't have any effect, but your neighbor or your young constituent is not going to have the same effect as you had in the past. So I think the most dangerous thing is the message that cannabis is harmless. That's why I encourage politicians, so even those who are for legalization, to just state the fact. You say, okay, this drug can be dangerous. It is linked to increased risk of psychosis, you know, by two to five fold. You know, it can increase the risk of addiction, for example, for cannabis users. You know, 10% of cannabis users will slide into addiction, and this is even a dire when you talk about teenagers. When we talk about teenagers, the risk of addiction increases to 17%. It almost doubles. So it's one teenager out of six who will slide into addiction. So if you are among the five who didn't slide into addiction, you cannot say that the one who slide into addiction is insignificant, because that's 17%. Of our teenagers who use cannabis, who will slide into addiction. And when you start your young life addicted to something, you are at increased risk of developing or experiencing depressive symptoms sometime in your life, the risk of falling into addiction to other drugs as well. So it is important, you know, to make sure that we state the fact. Otherwise, it is a really big disservice to our people if we do not say the real stuff. So my biggest concern is how those people talk about cannabis that can be really dangerous.
And you make that distinction in the beginning of the book. You make a distinction about the people who start using cannabis when they are teenagers, that it is much more dangerous than somebody that would start smoking or using it later on in their life. And that's interesting. Of course, because the brain is still developing. When you're 13 or 14 or 15, your brain is still developing, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And this is a message I repeat over and over throughout the book, because I think it's a major issue that we need to make sure people understand this. The brain develops up until the age of 25. You know, for some people, especially men, it can even go on until the age of 32. And you know, when your brain develops, it starts developing from the back toward to the front. So the front parts of your brain develop a little later in life. And one of those parts is the captain of the brain, the what we call the prefrontal cortex. This is the part of your brain that is directly above your eyes. This is the captain. This is the pilot of your brain. And when you smoke cannabis, before this part is fully developed, you can interfere with the myelinization or the full developing of the neurons in this part of your brain, which is called prefrontal cortex. And this is a part of the brain that is involved in focus, attention, decision making, intuitive thinking, what we call executive function, organization, anticipation. anticipation, planification. So it is a major part of your brain. So when you interfere with the full development of this part of your brain, you can have long lasting consequences. This is why I highly encourage those under 25 to stay away from cannabis, or at least to wait for now.
Right. And now you have worked in the emergency department.
I still do.
You still do. And what kind of psychotic episodes would people experience? Using cannabis.
Yeah, that's a very, very good question, and I think it's a very important question, because this is something we see a lot in the ER. You know, I understand a lot of cannabis users have never probably experienced this psychosis or a psychotic episode, or have not seen someone. But for people like me, who is a consultant psychiatrist in the ER, I see this like very often during the year. It's not unusual to meet people like this. 20-year-old. A guy who comes with his dad and his friend and his girlfriend and is completely psychotic. He thinks his dad is involved with the FBI and CIA to spy on him, and they are following him everywhere. And he is completely paranoid. He doesn't trust anybody. He doesn't want his dad to approach him because he thinks he's trying to kill him. And this fine young 20-year-old man was just doing fine yesterday. You know, the day he was completely well. And we learned from his friend who was in the ER that they took cannabis together. For the first time, they tried cannabis, and his friend became psychotic, like, right away. But the other guy was doing just fine. So he didn't think there was a link between cannabis and psychosis, because he didn't have psychosis. So there were two young men who took the same amount of cannabis. One was completely psychosis, and he was brought to the ER by the other, who was doing fine. So this is something that we see, and it is really sad to see this fine young man. You know, sometimes after a few days, the psychosis goes away, but they increase their vulnerability to fall into a psychiatric disorder like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or a bipolar disorder. So when you have what we call a toxic psychosis, that means a psychosis that is caused by a substance. It can be a drug or any other substance that can cause a psychosis. So when you have this toxic psychosis, which might go away after a few hours or a few days, your risk of falling into developing a psychiatric disorder in 10 years is about 50%. So one out of two people who has toxic psychosis will develop a psychiatric condition like schizophrenia in 10 years. So it's not insignificant. And we see others, you know, who has already underlying vulnerability. Okay? Let's say if they are, they have like a predisposition to develop a psychiatric disorder like psychosis or other, like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or bipolar disorder. They have this.
Right. All right. Dr. Antoine, we do have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Thoughts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. Change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with our first guest today, and that is Dr. Antoine Kanamugire, and his website is drantoine.org. And is there a difference between addiction and dependency? Are they similar? Are they, is there a difference?
Yeah, I think the, it's just terms that we are use, you know, interchangeably. But, when we say dependence, it can be, you know, a physical dependence or a psychological dependence, because you can be dependent, you can develop a dependence, a physical dependence on a substance, without developing a psychological dependence to that substance. That means when you do not use that substance, you have physical symptoms that manifest, but you're not longing necessarily to take that substance for any cost. So that means you have a physical dependence. Let's say somebody who is taking some kind of medication, and when they stop using it, they have symptoms, physical symptoms. That means the body has developed a physical dependence to that substance, but they are not necessarily mentally addicted to that substance.
Okay.
So that's the difference. But when you say addiction, that means you really, you know, you are ready to pay a very big price to get the substance. You know, sometimes people will sacrifice social, so their social life, they sacrifice family activities, they sacrifice, you know, their jobs sometimes, or their financial, their finances are affected by their usage of a certain substance. That means they are addicted, you know, they are mentally or psychologically addicted to the substance.
Okay.
But now these days we use the new term that we use when we talk about the substance, we use substance use disorder, which can include abuse and dependence on substance. It's like a new term that you see in the literature, in the scientific literature, substance use disorder, like cannabis use disorder. Instead of saying cannabis addiction, you will see more and more cannabis use disorder, which includes, you know, cannabis addiction, abuse. Yeah, so that's pretty much what it means when we use those terms.
Okay. Additionally, do you think that somebody that has possibly suffered from a very traumatic experience would use marijuana to kind of cover or address that issue in order to not feel the pain? Would that be a possible use for it?
Mm-hmm. So this is a good question. When somebody falls into addiction to a certain substance, they are usually underlying vulnerabilities that may result from, you know, their genetic predispositions or their life experiences or the stresses under which they are in that specific time. So there are different risk factors that can predispose someone to fall into a cannabis use or a cannabis use disorder or cannabis addiction, including the trauma from the past. You know, if you've lived a very healthy life in your life, when you have suffered from, you know, abuse or other problems in your life, when you are going through a divorce, when you are going through when you've been laid out at your work, or you have a very tough financial situation, it's now the time to start an addictive substance, because you are more likely to slide into addiction when you use substance during those circumstances. And but if we talk about that medical marijuana, I don't know if you
right.
tried that as well. If first of all, I would like to tell people that self treatment is never advised in medicine. Do not treat yourself, even if you think, you know, oh, I'm a little anxious. You know, I have an anxiety disorder, then I'm going to treat myself with cannabis or with alcohol. It is never advised to treat yourself. Get a professional who can diagnose your problem and suggest the best treatment. Because when you self-treat, you are more likely to forget the good practices of you are less objective, if I can use that term.
Sure.
So you are more likely to fall into addiction in that time. So it's not advice. Oh. But
okay, we do have a quick 3-minute break. I hate to interrupt, but we do have to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All righty, welcome back. I hate to cut into that tune, but we have some very important things to discuss here. Somebody mentioned an article in the chat room that I also have posted on the schedule page today that was written by Alex Berenson, and it's on the schedule page, a link to his article. And I really do believe that taking a substance for recreational purposes is not a good idea. If it's going to alter your mind, it's just not a good idea to me. And I have tried marijuana 3 times, very briefly. Well, I mean three single individual times. One when I was quite young, and all 3 times it didn't do anything for me. I didn't see any purpose or have any desire to continue its use, or it just didn't seem like a rational thing to do. Because I really appreciate my mind, and I appreciate being a clear thinker, and it just didn't seem rational that I would want to alter that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good observation. Thank you for sharing your story. And, you know, the stories like those are so many, especially for us clinicians. A lot of young people, you know, this 19-year-old guy that I meet, you know, with his dad, mom, sister, you know, grandfather, you know, everybody was with him. And this bright young man, you know, who finished high school with an average above 90% in everything, you know, starts college, first semester, above 92 in everything, second semester, everything changes. That's missing class, no homework, miss exams, parents are worried, you know, everybody is worried except him. And they are all wondering what's going on, you know, until they found out, you know, try to find out, there's no thyroid problem, there's no depression, we don't find any psychosis, we don't find any other physical problems, you know. And finally, we find out that the only change that happened in this young man's life is that he started using cannabis between the first and the second semester, you know, and he went really heavy on cannabis. And in the second semester, grades dropped to 50%, 60%. And so everybody was worried, you know, think that, you know, what's going on? This young man, you know, very bright young man, experienced what we call a motivational shift. This is a syndrome that we see very often in people who use substance, people who are addicted, who fall into an addiction to some kind of substance, including marijuana. So this lack of motivation, lack of vision, lack of purpose, you know, everything is all right, no problem, nothing is major, you know, this kind of neglect of priorities, this is what we call a motivational syndrome, and it's very, very common in especially teenagers who start using heavily, who start using cannabis in a heavy way. So it is important to really mention the truth. That's why I called my book The 21 Unspoken Truth About Marijuana, because there are a lot of things that we hear about marijuana that are not necessary to literally myths. We need to point out the truth about the substance so that people can make their own choice, but based on the facts. This is why I really said in different parts of my book that the goal of this book is not to judge anyone, but to create awareness so that right. Whatever choice we make, at least we know we are making a well-informed and educated choice. So that we can
right.
protect our brains, our young people's brains.
Well, I mentioned my experience with it, and the first time that it was given to me by somebody who was trying to take advantage of me and obviously understood that it would decrease my awareness because he was trying to take advantage of me in a very negative way. So he must have, that's
exactly.
What I figured. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because it's going, as I said before, it's going to affect the prefrontal cortex, the decision-making part of your brain, called the prefrontal cortex. And that's the part also that is involved in what we call inhibition. Behavior inhibition, you know, like the brake. When you're driving, you have the gas, you press the gas to accelerate the car, but you have the brake to slow down. So the brake to slow down so that you can make conscious decision is found in the prefrontal cortex. And cannabis makes that very loose. So you can make sometimes, bad decisions affected exactly. So, right.
Mm-hmm. And it is a shame. I can't imagine how culture will change if they do legalize it throughout the country and it is openly available. It's going to be terrible, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a concern. It's a concern that people have to really think about because it's going to affect, because the message it sends to our young people is like many, we interpret the legalization as a green light to use
right.
the substance.
Right. And somebody that would never do it before.
And some people will say, especially younger ones. Because it's legal, you know, that means the government and our politicians, you know, vetted it, and they know it's not dangerous. It's not, it's completely harmless. So they might jump aboard. So this is what we need to make sure that it is understood. And you know, that's why I applaud people like you who engage this kind of conversation, you know, with experts, so that we can share this voice that might be unheard in my office. I can do this in my office. I can do it in the ER, but because of people like you, I can reach more audience, more people I will never meet in person, so that I can talk to those people and let them know that this substance is not necessarily what they might think it is, because it can be, again, I'm not saying that cannabis is the most dangerous drug out there, but it carries its own risk. And we need to
and I think,
sure,
too, that it could possibly lead, right. Would you consider it a gateway drug?
Yeah, if I can explain better what a gateway drug means. It means, I try to explain this as a house. You know, you have a front gate in the house, you know, the door to get in the house. And in the house, there are different rooms. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have an illustration in my book trying to explain this, you know, if the front door is cannabis, you know, and you open the front door to get in the house, once you are in the house, inside the house, it's easier to get in the bedroom.
Ah, yes.
So you're already inside the house. So you're already in that environment. So it is easy. It's easy to go in the bedroom of heroin. It's easy to go in the bedroom of alcohol. It's easy to get into the bedroom of cocaine. So once you cross that door, it's easier to get addicted to other substances. And again, the cannabis is not the only gateway drug. When any addiction, an addiction to any substance, increases the risk of falling into addiction to other substances. Even tobacco, when you are addicted to tobacco, you're probably 7 times more likely to fall into cannabis addiction. So you can see the link. So the person is already have vulnerabilities or risk factors to fall into addiction. So when you open the door, you already started a process that you might not be able to stop. And for example, when you're addicted to alcohol, you're 2 times more likely to fall into heroin addiction sometime in your life.
Wow.
When you're addicted to cannabis as well, you are 3 times more likely to fall into heroin addiction sometime in your life. So you can see the process. So it's not only cannabis addiction that is a gateway drug. It's an addiction to any substance, any addictive substance that is opening the door to other substances.
And so yes, you talk
part of that.
You talk about the brain's reward system, and that it's triggered when the brain's endocannabinoid system is activated, because those cannabinoid receptors in your brain react, and your reward, it's a reward system, so you're going to want to do that more because it can be addictive, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, in everybody's brain, what we call the endocannabinoid system, and this is like a cannabis-like system already established in your brain, you know, and it plays a major role in teenagers and young adults developing brain, you know, endocannabinoid, like anandamide and others. help regulate other chemicals or other neurotransmitters in the brain. So when a teenager and young adult takes outside cannabis, you start to interfere with the already well-established endocannabinoid system in your brain, which might interfere with other chemicals in your brain, which will affect the maturing or development of your brain. And as well, cannabis is linked to the system in your brain that is involved in pleasure, in stimulating,
right.
You know, feeling of pleasure. So when you take that, it's going to affect that system, you know, and the release of dopamine in your brain, which will give you the pleasure and the feeling of high. So you get yourself closer to addiction every time you use an addictive substance. And this is true for you know, heavy alcohol users. This is true for cocaine users. This is true for heroin. So, you know, it's all going to affect that specific system in your brain.
Right.
So,
now,
yeah.
you also mentioned in your book, let me read what you say. Frequent and heavy marijuana smokers often have respiratory problems, such as shortness of breath and increased sputum production in their lungs due to damage to their respiratory airways, similar to the symptoms seen in heavy tobacco smokers. So, it's not only not healthy psychologically, but physically.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I have a quote saying, "Smoke is smoke."
Okay? Right.
Cannabis,
yes.
Cannabis smoke. The cannabis smoke is smoke. But nobody should ever say that cannabis smoke is good for you. This, you know, we heard this story decades ago when they used portray tobacco smoke as good for your lungs. Some people would even used to say that tobacco smoke will increase your lung, you know, your lung function, which is not true. Now we know it. And
right.
People who say, oh, cannabis smoke is not dangerous, that's not true. That's a myth. Because marijuana smoke contains over 450 chemicals.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them are cancer-causing chemicals, exactly similar to tobacco smoke. So if tobacco smoke is known to increase the risk of cancer and other respiratory systems, marijuana smoke has many similar cancer-causing chemicals. So it would be unfair and hypocritical to say that cannabis smoke is safe. It's not safe to smoke anything, including cannabis. And some studies from England even show that, you know, cannabis smoke might have more cancer-causing chemicals than tobacco smoke. And this is something we will learn in the next 2 years. Some consider that smoking three joints is equivalent to smoking a whole packet of tobacco, cigarettes. So it's important to really point out that cannabis smoke is not good for your lungs. So it increases the risk of respiratory disorders. It can deteriorate your asthma. It can cause cancer. It can even affect your blood vessels, which might lead to other problems like high blood pressure on the long run, and other problems caused by smoke as well. It's important to not only for your mental health, it might be dangerous, but also smoking cannabis can be a great disservice to your physical health.
Right. Somebody in the chat room also just mentioned, not to mention all the chemicals sprayed on them. So, we really don't know. People who smoke cannabis really are taking such a big chance with their health, both their mental health and their physical health.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So we still have a lot to learn when we talk about cannabis. You know, we still need many, many studies, but we have enough studies now to conclude that it can affect mental health, especially for those under 25. It is even more dangerous. So, and for those who have already some vulnerabilities in terms of mental health, not a good idea, because it can trigger serious psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia if you already have underlying vulnerabilities. So very important to consider all the risk factors. I dedicated 3 chapters on risk factors in my book, The 21 Unspoken Truth About Marijuana. I dedicated 3 chapters so that you know, how do you know you're sliding from recreational use to an addiction? How, you know, what are the risk factors that I get hooked to this substance when I try it? You know, what are the signs that I might be sliding into addiction? So, it is a very important thing to understand so that you know if you are vulnerable, especially, you know, I do not advise cannabis for anybody, but especially if you're under 25 or have other vulnerabilities, you know, I advise people to stay away. If you have a depression, you know, some people will say, oh, cannabis with depression. We do not have studies, scientific studies that show that cannabis is a treatment for depression. Because heavy cannabis use, especially heavy THC, reduce serotonin activity in your brain, and it can increase the risk of depression, especially in teenagers. You know, those who heavily use cannabis are 4 times more likely to experience depressive symptoms sometime in their life. So it is important if you have these kinds of vulnerabilities to really stay away.
Wow. Yes, exactly. We've already discussed the suicide issue with that one young man, and certainly he didn't plan on that, but it happened. It happened anyway.
Yes.
And
actually, the story in my book, he didn't commit suicide. The guy didn't commit suicide. He didn't want to die.
He jumped.
Was just completely psychotic that he jumped, thinking, you know, he has superpowers of some kind.
That right.
He didn't want to die. That's not a suicide. That's, you know, an accidental death caused by an altered mental state or caused by psychosis. So cannabis has not an overdose. Cannabis overdose is not that generally we cannot say that you would take enough cannabis to just die on the spot. But it can be deadly in terms of how you drive. If you drive dangerously, you can die. It can be deadly because you fall into psychosis and you make very, very bad decisions that can kill you, just like that young man. So it is the overdose. Cannabis is not deadly, but the consequences, the indirect consequences can lead to very dangerous circumstances. So it is important to do this. And I repeat, I am a physician who see a lot of people in the ER, in my outpatient clinics, and in the community. I see people who are affected by this substance. So please do not distort the message that cannabis is completely harmless, because it's a great disservice to those who might be vulnerable to this very serious risk.
Right. You have a Chinese proverb in chapter 7, at the beginning of chapter 7, where you talk about addiction risk factors. And it says, it is better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. And you have certainly done that in writing your book. You have lighted a candle. You have written a book that hopefully many, many people, my listeners particularly, hopefully they will read this book and share it with their family and friends, because of the legalization of this very dangerous substance. So I thank you very much, for lighting that one candle. And hopefully, as I said, people will read your book and gain much knowledge.
Yeah, I really do appreciate it.
I certainly enjoyed reading it, and.
Oh, I
go ahead.
Appreciate that. You know, people like to ask me, you know, why did you put yourself in a situation, you know, doctor, you're busy. Why did you?
Right. Why did you do this?
Why is this subject, you know, everybody, you know, talking, you know, oh, why did you write this book? I'm like, you know what? I can only meet a few people, you know, in my time, you know. I work a lot, but there are people I might never meet in life. But this book will probably take the message out there. And I really had this desire to share with my fellow citizens about the potential risk that this substance can pose, especially for those who are vulnerable. And I started this campaign called Because We Care. You know, you can go to my Facebook
yes.
page called Dr. Antoine, DRANTOINE, Because We Care. Dr. Antoine, Because We Care. You know, where I share, you know, the important message and the interviews I do so that we can raise the awareness to prevent the
harm.
The harm.
And I thank you so very much for being on the program today. Bless your heart. Thank you so much.